Hello, this is UU Todd Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you're in fact listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. If I could rhyme one more time, Rome and home, you still might not get there. If I could rhyme one more time, street and feet, you'd shake your head and laugh. So I think I'll try some different rhymes, rude, loud, barbed, gritty, painful, dazzling rhymes, and learn to sing them loud enough to wake up City Hall. Well, yes, it's me, Utah Phillips, here with Steve Baker, who is once again twirling the knobs to music of the Borsdorfs. That was my old friend Nancy Spencer, one of the world's great musical saw players, down from Ashland, Oregon, visiting for a couple of days, playing Home Sweet Home. That poem is by D.D. Winepress, a name I used to use on the skids in a prior incarnation. We are here in the studios of KVMR, Voice of the Peeps, Bane of the Creeps, here in Nevada City, California. We broadcast, well, right now, it's Sunday. It's Sunday here in Nevada City. I don't know what time it is or what day it is where you are. We broadcast our show Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning to Western Nevada County, and then we blast it into the enormity of Sacramento. Excuse me, this program... This program is about, in a way, it's about homelessness, I suppose, about homeless. Mostly, I guess, it's about what puts you there, some of the things that can put you there. Now, as I've said before, I'm not a documentarian. I've got no statistics, no facts. I'm not a sociologist. I'm not even much of an historian. All I can give you are impressions and songs and stories, and then you let the images dance through your own mind and see what you come up with. Well, here's a piece that I wrote many years ago in one of my periodic forays onto the street. I'll give you that, and then a song by Bob Snyder, a great doorway singer, street singer from up there in Toronto, Canada, called Bums in the Park. And then while that's going on, I want to do a poem, a heavy-handed poem by Carl Sandburg called Mag. Sometimes, you know, a poem or a song just got to knock you around a little before we finally begin to understand it. Well, all right, here's the answers. These days, you find a lot of people on the skids who don't fit in anywhere because they're not shaped like any of the holes. Mad people. Now, I, for one, intend to take random behavior more seriously because I intend to become a good deal more ungovernable than I already am. I was never oversold on reality anyway. It is the sort of thing, if you look at it straight on, that will turn you to stone, petrify you, so that you can't move in any direction. Like Medusa. Even Perseus, when he slew Medusa, couldn't look her in the face but had to catch a reflection in his shield before he lashed out with his sword. Perseus severed the head from reality. But where her blood sank into the earth, Pegasus, the winged horse, sprang up. Imagination was born. I have a horse with wings on it inside my head, and reality didn't put it there, and I will fly it where I choose, but not to heaven. It seems to me that the parameters of what is called socially acceptable behavior become so narrow that most of us are driven mad simply by definition.
Oh, the bums in the park, they come out after dark. They dance and they sing, their bottles they bring. They sleep in the bushes when they get tired, all wrapped in their overcoats. They lay themselves down between the newspaper and the cardboard they found. Their shoes are their pillow, their mattress is the ground. Out on the benches during the day, their bottles are usually hidden away, though they'd offer you some if you came around. But deep in the nighttime, if you're passing by, you might hear a cough, you might hear a sigh, but I wouldn't look for them. No, don't even try. Oh, the bums in the park, they come out after dark. They dance and they sing, their bottles they bring. They sleep in the bushes when they get tired.
I wish to God I never saw you, Mag. I wish you never quit your job and came along with me. I wish we never bought a license and a white dress for you to get married in the day we ran off to a minister and told him we would love each other and take care of each other always and always, long as the sun and the rain lasts anywhere. Yes, I'm wishing now you lived somewhere else away from here, and I was a bum on the bumpers 1,000 miles away, dead broke. I wish the kids had never come, and rent and coal and clothes to pay for, and a grocery man calling for cash. Every day, cash for beans and prunes. I wish to God I never saw you, Mag. I wish to God the kids had never come. Madness. You see how it all falls apart, huh? First time I saw it, I was walking up from the railroad station there in Portland. Saw a sandwich board out on the sidewalk with a big circle and three X's in it. Now, I knew that was the old Sisters of the Road, the old tramp symbol for a place to go and eat where you could get good food. It was out in front of Sisters of the Road there, a trancheon, a homeless cafe down on the skids. It's been there for over 20 years now. I went in, and it was warm and convivial. The bedrolls and bindles were parked in one corner. And you know, the people that were eating there were getting served at the table. It wasn't a soup kitchen. I had walked into a community of people who wanted to share their lives with the homeless. That at voluntary poverty that the Catholic workers practice all over the country. $1.25 gets you a Cracker Jack meal from 10 o'clock in the morning till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 days a week. And people who come in, it's a completely non-violent place. You can lay that whole burden down when you walk in the door. They wind up serving at the tables. And then they wind up working behind the counter. And some of them wind up managing the cafe, you see, and get on back out into the world. It was Jenny Nelson, the co-founder of the cafe. Well, she wrote a book called Dining with Dignity about how to run a cafe like that and how to do conflict resolution, the whole ball of wax. She wrote this, in 1980. Jenny Nelson. In 1980, I wrote that Sisters of the Road Cafe is about many things. We are about good food at little cost and dignity to all persons. We are about small beginnings and radical go-to-the-roots change. In a world intoxicated with death, we are about life. In a neighborhood where the will to survive is so strong, we are about hope. If I were to add to that now, I would include three truths Dorothy Day, co-founder of the Catholic Worker, often quoted St. Vincent de Paul. It is only by feeling your love that the poor will forgive you for the gifts of bread. So Sisters is not about helping hungry and homeless people. We are about creating community with them. We are not about being immune to our common woundedness. We are also about mistakes, all of them you can make in 14 years' time, and the places you can go for having taken a lesson from them. You could use this in your town. You can get hold of Sisters of the Road and ask for their book, Dining with Dignity, 133 Northwest 6th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97209. 133 Northwest 6th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97209. Well, let's listen to a song about Sisters of the Road from Casey Neal.
Rain falls relentless on these streets, chills you to the very bone. It's coming down tonight in Portland town, and folks are warm inside their homes. Katrina, she came from Missouri after her mother passed on, to get away from her old man who needed someone to take it out on. So she took up with the crusty boys and their fingerless gloves. Here in the Oregon streets she found a family again to love. They dumpstered their food, stuck into the shows, took what shelter they could find. Never once did she regret leaving the life she left behind. And your friends become your family and lighten a heavy load. With Abby and D.C. Louis, she was a sister of the road. Trina fell for a punk named Silver from southern Illinois, who'd been living on the streets of the West Coast since he was a 13-year-old boy. He knew every stomp down every dry place to keep warm, and he'd take her to him when the darkness fell, and they'd lie in each other's arms. Silver hustled now and again in the backs of drunk men's cars. Scars ran up and down his arms like the tracks in the rail yard. He offered it to her, you know, she never once took it. Beneath the iPhone. 5 viaduct, his teeth clenched to a tourniquet. Cops found his body in the rail yard where he'd hopped the line to Frisco. For the last year of his life, he loved a sister of the road. Trina found her way up off the streets, works in a clinic downtown. All the people she used to know, well, she never sees them around. There are more where they came from, cast aside and left behind by a society of untold prosperity that don't pay a man in mind. For the old hobos, the migrant laborers, the lost and the wayward teens, there's a place where $1.25 will get you a plate of eggs and beans. And there's nothing like a cup of coffee when the winter winds blow cold. You can find them down in Old Town on 6th, the Sisters of the Road.
Well, you go there when you're in Portland, you know, and you've taken your vacation in the West. You make sure that you go and visit Sisters of the Road and see dining with dignity. Dignity. When Joanna, my wife, and I were up in Portland, we were doing the annual show. It's a benefit a bunch of us do to raise money for Sisters of the Road Cafe. Now, we were taken down to a homeless camp underneath the overpass bridge, freeway bridge, called Dignity Village. I guess there must have been about 25 or 30 tents down there. Well organized. It was one tent with a cooperative food storage and kitchen. There were porta potties there that they had adapted one of them to wheelchair, because one of the fellows down there didn't have any legs. And there were a couple of kids there too. Well, they had to move there, of course. It was the property of the city and the transportation department. They didn't want them there anymore. Well, it was a long process they went through, and finally they were given a place called the Sunderland site outside of town, which is really hard if you got a little work that you're able to scare up. You got to be close to services or to a hospital. It's real hard being out of that Sunderland site. Besides, it's all paved over, and it's sort of a little slight bowl there because it was used for composting leaves, and so the water gathers in it. Well, they had to build platforms to raise the tents up. And they fenced it in, but I guess the folks living there and volunteers, must be about 60 out there now, have cut windows in the fence and put doors in and trying to turn it into a more human place. You know, that site runs out on Halloween. Oh, some of them that didn't want to move out to the Sunderland site went and occupied a strip of green in between two roads down in town. They called it the Field of Dreams. But there were some arrests, and they got run out. Now, look, this Camp Dignity is now Dignity Village, and they are looking for a permanent site. It's going to have to be on private ground, hopefully on some railroad property. They're the biggest landowners up there, Union Pacific and Southern Pacific. But they got to get onto some private ground, because the object is to build a permanent transient village that's self-governing and self-regulating. There's a website that some local people have put up about Dignity Village. I'll give that to you. www.outofthedoorways.org. www.outofthedoorways.org. You pull that up on your box and you read more about it. Well, I've done so many field recordings of other people. It's my turn now. I had some words float through my head about Dignity Village and about Portland, and I'll sing them to you. I didn't bring my guitar. My hands are not working properly, and I'm going to have to give that up. I'm going to have to get accustomed to the idea of singing without a guitar, but there's always something to do, isn't there? I ain't got a home, I'm just a-walkin' round, looking for a doorway where I can lay down. The police make it hard no matter where I go. I ain't got a home in this town anymore. Once I had a job enough to pay the rent, clothing, car, and groceries, they took up every cent. The boss laid me off and he showed me out the door. Now I ain't got a job or a home anymore. I went down to employment, they said, what can you do? I'll try most anything, but there's nothing here for you. No place left to borrow, my kin are just as poor, and I ain't got a home in this town anymore. I see the rich folks' houses are more than they can use, but we just keep on moving, our home is in our shoes. You see us worn and ragged, sick and hungry too, and don't know it could happen to any one of you. Well, just when I was thinking, I guess I'll never win, I found a camp called Dignity, you know they took me in. Well, now I'm clean and sober, instead of up against the wall. Looks like I found a home in this town after all. Yes, I finally found a home, a place where I can be, where my brothers and my sisters can live in dignity. And I won't go back to living the way I did before. We ain't gonna take being homeless anymore. Dignity Village. I picked up a book some time ago. I think it was in a cutout shelf of a bookstore down in San Francisco. It is called The Last Resort, Scenes from a Transient Hotel by Aggie Max. That's A-G-G-I-E Max. That's a book I recommend to you. I got to give you these names and addresses. There's no sense doing this if I don't give you something, you know. The Last Resort, Aggie Max, is by Chronicle Books. It's a fairly new book, I suppose, so you find it. It's her journal of being homeless and then finally founding a rundown apartment at a transient hotel with somebody that she doesn't particularly want to be with. Finally, she does get her own little place and spends hours worrying about being thrown out of it. Let me give you a little bit of a piece from The Last Resort by Aggie Max. It's a good place, an easy place to begin. The banal present and the remote past, two planets further from the sun of my personal madness. I am circling myself like a sick wolf circling the starving prospector on the frozen tundra of Alaska. It's probably dangerous. There's nothing else to do now. I wake up every morning in an avalanche of pain and rage and fear, wishing I didn't have to wake up, understanding now why Adeline's first waking thought would be, need a drink, and why this will be provided. Only this, and nothing else. How much influence does the past have on us? Not even my own personal past, with which I am dreading the inevitable confrontation, but the thoughts and feelings and actions which took place on distant links of the chain back to oblivion, are they still taking place in me? Are the nomad and the settler battling to the death over the barren stretch of wilderness inside my head? Do you get to have some peace after they've killed each other? At night, deep in the night, I lie on my torture rack while the rat runs on its wheel in my head. I try to think about good things. There are no good things. Of course there are. You just don't want to think about them. But the rat likes its wheel. You enjoy the torture. You feed on it. It feeds you. I analyze my nightmares. I can't tell dreams from reality anymore because it's all bad. The sorry rat. Dreams are a metaphor for whatever you try to ignore. Thank you.
lonesome and lonely in an old New York hotel, a stranger to a city that she used to know so well, bathing in a bathroom that is bathed in the first blue light of the beginning of a century at the end of an endless night. Then she's wet behind the ears and wafting down the avenue, pre-rush hour, post-rain shower, stillness seeping upwards like steam from another molten sewer this summer in New York. They've been spraying us with chemicals in our sleep, us, they, something about the mosquitoes having some kind of disease, them, me, CIA foul play if you ask the guy selling hair dryers out of a gym bag, chemical warfare. I'm telling you, lab rat to lab rat, he says, that's where the truth is at. That's where the truth is at. That's where the truth is at. And everything seems to have gone terribly wrong that can. But one breath at a time is an acceptable plan, she tells herself. And the air is still there. This morning it's even breathable. And for a second the relief is unbelievable. And she's a heavy sack of flour sifted, her burden lifted. And she's full of clean wind for one lean moment. And then she's trapped again. Reverted, caged, and contorted with no way to get free. And she's getting plenty of little kisses, but nobody's slipping her the key. And her whole life is a long list of what ifs, and she doesn't even know where to begin. And the pageantry of suffering therein rivals television. TV is, after all, the modern-day Roman Colosseum, human devastation as mass entertainment, and now millions sit cheering, collectively cheering, the bloodthirsty hierarchy of the patriarchal arrangement. And she is hailing the curve, she is sailing down the avenue. She's 19 going on 30, or maybe she's really 30 now, it's hard to say. It's hard to keep up with time once it's on its way. Of a chance. Born into a family built like an avalanche, and somewhere in the 80s, between the oat bran and the ozone, she started to figure out things like why. One eye pointed upwards, looking for the holes in the sky. One eye on a little flashing red light, a Picasso face twisted and listing down the canvas of the end of an endless night.
Thank you.
back again. Kenny Hall, Blind Kenny Hall, down there in Fresno, California. That last song you heard was Ana DeFranco, what she calls Tamborizza Lingua. What a good poet. Peter Murin was a French peasant, wanderer, day laborer, philosopher, a poet in his way. It was his words out of which grew the Catholic worker movement. Catholic anarchists, creating community on the skids, living radiantly in poverty, taking nothing from the state and giving nothing to it, doing the works of mercy. Peter Murin said, I want to live in a world where it's easy to be good. I want to live in a world where it's easy to be good. Well, if you're cold and lonely and hungry, it's hard to be good, isn't it? You're hanging somebody up, throw a brick through a window, knock somebody down. The Catholic workers set about to create corners, houses of hospitality in the skids all over the country, about 80 of them, little corners where there was human warmth, food, and companionship, where it was just easier to be good. No preaching, no waiting for the sermon to be over to get your donut. No, sir, no, just the works of mercy, just treating people like decent human beings. Dorothy Day, well, she was with the Catholic worker for many, many years. I knew her when she was an elderly woman. She's my personal heroine. Dorothy Day wrote this in 1940. You see how it sounds now. And then we'll listen to Loudon Wainwright's new song here called Homeless. 1940. Last night, going downtown on the 3rd Avenue L, there was a shabby black-haired man with a strong, impassive face sitting in the corner by the door with his eyes closed. Just before we got to each stop, he called the station. Next stop, Chatham Square. Change here for City Hall. This is a South Ferry train. Next stop, Franklin Square. Next stop, South Ferry. This is the end of the line. All out for South Ferry. Other people sitting in the car, respectable, well-dressed people, people with jobs, people with families, people going to see their friends or coming from visits, a regular Sunday crowd, all laughed at this strange man sitting there, his eyes closed, his face so impassive, calling the stations in a strong, loud voice. They thought he was drunk. Maybe he was. They thought, just another bum going down to South Ferry to sleep at the Muni. Maybe he was. His clothes were rags. He had no overcoat, and it was 15 above zero. He had on two pairs of trousers. You could see one hanging below the other. He had on a ragged sweater under his too small coat. What was the story behind those eyes? What were the pictures in that tired brain as the man called out, South Ferry, last stop, the end of the line, all out for South Ferry. He must have worked on the elevated once. Must have had the job of opening and closing the gates, calling the stations, going to the end of the line at South Ferry, then back up to the Bronx, down and up all day long. A job that meant a paycheck, a job that was useful. He was serving others, not exploiting them, not making money off their labor. Perhaps he thought of the home at the end of the last trip, of a warm house, a meal awaiting him, time to read the paper and listen to the radio. Now he is one of the dispossessed. Now he possesses neither clothing, shelter, nor food. Now, where is his family? 9 million out of work throughout the country and plenty of good, constructive work to be done, homes to be built, schools, roads, hospitals. But we're not talking about the unemployed now. We're talking about war and armaments. These are the people in our breadlines. These are the men and women who come to us for shelter, for clothing. And while we are trying to change the social order, while we are trying to build a new civilization within the shell of the old, we must perform the works of mercy and take care of our brothers and sisters in need.
When you were alive, I was never alone. Somewhere in the world, there was something called home. And as long as you lived, I would be all right. There were reasons to win and incentives to fight. Now I'm smoking again. I thought all that was through, and I don't wanna live, but what else can I do? And I feel like I've faked all that I ever did, and I've grown a gray beard, but I cry like a kid. I was 7 when I sang you rising the bow there in Aunt Mary's kitchen, and I don't guess I know that it's why I've done this for all of this time. But now playing and singing seems a game or a crime. People have called to find out if I'm fine. I assure them I am, but I'm not. It's a lie. They say in the end your good friends pull you through, but everyone knows my best friend was you. Hey, I've gotten some help. I guess I was afraid. You suppose something will happen someone is paid. But I am getting better. Once again, I'll be strong. After all, listen, I'm singing this song. I was never alone. Somewhere in the world there was something called home. Now I feel like I'm homeless, but I will be all right. I'll get through the day. I'll face down the night.
Loudon Wainwright, Facing Down the Night. Listen, I forgot to tell you, you know, that Catholic Worker, people living in voluntary poverty, put out a newspaper about every second month called The Catholic Worker, and only costs a penny a copy. It always has. 25 cents a year. How can you beat that? 36 East 1st Street, New York City, 1003. June 16th, 1990, Lane County, Oregon. The Opportunity Shelter was a county-run opportunity shelter for women and children escaping domestic violence. Well, it was shut down by the county. Well, the women and the kids in there, they set up a tent camp out in front of it. And they camped there. There were 35 arrests. A summer of action, of outreach, of education. Well, Patrick Dodd sang there a song, and the women joined in singing with him the song of the shelter. Well, how did Patrick get there? What is the road? You know, sometimes it's so hard to grow up, and you have to go into the world carrying such a heavy burden, and either it can put you down and push you down on the street, or it can bring you up. Let's listen to 3 songs from Patrick Dodd, and he'll tell you that whole story.
I remember how she used to go crazy. This time seemed worse than the town before. Then she'd sit and cry, who's gonna watch my baby? If I can't do this anymore, you see, she just couldn't trust my daddy. And the cards never dealt her no one else. Treated mama so badly. Sometimes she just couldn't trust herself. She'd say, now son, sometimes I wish this race was just through. Then what in the world would I do about you? Ooh.
Cause he used to say, I feel like some kind of damn fool who wasted his whole life waiting for a train to come steaming into town. But hell, if it had to come in, it wouldn't have stopped. Hell, it wouldn't even have slowed down. He used to say, I am some kind of damn fool for wasting at least half my life hanging out down there in those sleazy bars. He used to say, son, do you have any idea how many nice places there are? He had the look of a loser and the walk of a cripple. He was at least half blind and lame. But I never once heard him pass the buck. He always said he was the one to blame. He used to say I must have just had a weakness for cheap wine and getting high. He used to say maybe I just had a weakness for the easy way out, son. Either way, I just let things fly by. He used to say, and now every goddamn morning I get the shakes, and my doctor tells me my liver's going bad. He used to say, but I gave up a long time ago, son. Only left over time out. He used to say, but you are young and you are free, and you could go if you just leave. Don't you stick around and watch me die. Hell, don't you even go. But somehow I clung to him and I stayed right there with him until one day he was just gone. I seen him planted in the cold ground. Then finally I moved on. And since that day I have been up and down at least 1,000 roads, and I don't think I'm even half done. And I may not know where I'm going. It'll never be like father, like son. She spends her nights in a shelter and her days on the streets, looking for a permanent place. Nobody wants kids and the rents are so high, each door just gets slammed in her face. She tries to stay cheerful and stay on her feet, but sometimes she don't know what for. About the time she hears her 100th no, this voice inside her just roars. She sings, I can't stand this, I just can't stand this, I can't stand this anymore. She's singing for her children now. I can't stand this, I just can't stand this, I can't stand this anymore. Sometimes she wonders how it got this bad, or why she's supposed to go it alone. And sometimes she feels like she'd sell her soul just to be sleeping at home. And sometimes she feels like nobody cares, or maybe they just don't understand, or maybe they're too busy looking out for themselves, and this whole place is just out of hand. But she sings, I can't stand this, I just can't stand this, I can't stand this anymore. She's singing for her children now. I can't stand this, I just can't stand this, I can't stand this anymore. Sometimes she wonders about those millions of women were trying hard to stay off the streets, doing what they can to raise their children right in a world where you're supposed to compete. And sometimes she dreams they'd all join hands and march like an army to war, shoulder to shoulder across this broad land, saying we just can't stand anymore. Sing it now.
We can't stand this. We just can't stand this. We can't stand this anymore.
We're singing for our children now.
We can't stand this. We just can't stand this. We can't stand this anymore. We won't stand this. We just won't stand this. We won't stand this anymore.
We're singing. Oh, I dreamed of home at the close of the day. So real and so near, yet so far away.
Everyone needs a nice place to live in, and good food to eat that's not too expensive, and clean clothes with no holes or patches, a doctor to call, an old friend to visit, a way to get places, parties, and music, a street to walk safely, and benches to sit on with shade in the summer, and warm, friendly places to be in the winter. Some work to do that's useful to others and doesn't get boring. People to come to for all kinds of answers, and somebody checking so no one's forgotten. Money to spend that's given and taken without feeling guilty. Love without pity. Pride without anger. Everyone knows what everyone needs, but programs, laws, city councils, commissions, agencies, bureaus can't give it to us. All of us need the best in each other, and if we can find it, and if we can give it, the rest will soon follow. If we all stick together, we'll get what we need. Thanks for coming along on this journey. Yeah, this has been Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. My name is Utah Phillips. Here's what one of the customers at Sisters of the Road said. I think that the greatest danger in a human life is to become so isolated that you don't react to others' pain or your own feelings. I hope that when I see someone injured, it will upset me. I fear, more than anything else, the coldness.